cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to our business masterclass. The first half of the hour is our business skills conversation. This is Richard Angus, the CEO of the finance team. Last week, we chatted on how to improve productivity in your business. That's a great show. Download the podcast. Today's theme is about accountability and the impact of the role of company directors. Joining me in studio is Carl Bates. He is an international expert on business growth and the education and implementation of governance for SMEs and privately held companies. Carl is an experienced chairman and independent director with great insight into the operation of companies and how they can create long-term value for shareholders and other stakeholders, inspire their teams, and deliver effectively for clients. As founder and chief executive of Sadar Group, he's world-renowned for his practical understanding of governance. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks very much for having me, Richard.
So, Carl, I read a book recently, a book on leadership accountability that actually spawned the thoughts for today by a gentleman by the name of Gerard Cranes. And he took the word lead and he broke it down from an acronym perspective into four statements. Yes. He talked about lead as being about leverage, about engagement, about alignment, and about development. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at that, I thought to myself, you know, in the South African context, one of the biggest things that I see a gap in is in smaller privately held companies and entities out there that where, you know, you've got these large corporates and they have their more traditional governance structures and yes. boards and committees, etc. And then there seems to be this gap around the whole question of directorships. And then you get down into the, let me call it the small entity where you've literally got the one man show and they're running their own show, doing their own thing. And you kind of think to yourself, okay, you know, I'm sorted because I am the business and the business is me. So I'm sorted. But it's that missing middle that really kind of worries me, and particularly in the world of accountability. Now, structurally, we have the Companies Act, which creates this role called a director. And I look at this and I say, well, in my mind, that's where the accountability issue really needs to sit in yes. these privately held companies and smaller family-owned concerns. Now, just talk to me a moment. I mean, you've obviously got huge experience in this world of the company director in this space. Why would people even be concerned about having, let's call it an independent person? Because often what happens is the business owner or the person who starts the business naturally assumes this or one of the director or some of the directorship yes. type of roles. And then there's this gap often of, well, am I the right person to be a director? Should I be a director? Who else should be directors? Do I take my longest serving employees and make them directors? How do I get independence? So there's a whole lot of questions I have in my mind around the principle of accountability. So maybe let's first start with the question of why have a director? What is a director's role? What are they meant to do?
I think you touch on a number of interesting things already in that question and the questions you asked just prior to it. I think what's interesting is in many ways you're giving, I think, a lot of company directors, shareholder managers as we call them, more credit than even they're due in terms mm-hmm. of their understanding of the role of a director. I often talk about the fact that most of us who become company directors, like yourself and myself, we become directors of our companies the day we sign the form and become a shareholder in the business. We become a director in the company. And we sort of think that through some form of divine intervention, mm. we now know what it means to be a director. Mm. You know, 99% of privately held company directors, I think, become or think that they understand what it means to be a director through that sort of osmosis process, if you like.
Mm. Well, it's amazing how empowering a signature is.
Well, it's true, and it's becoming even faster here in South Africa now with the new process and software to enable you to become a shareholder and director in a new company. You know,
do it all online and you don't even have to look.
Well, interestingly enough, the software is based, as I understand it, on the New Zealand Companies Office software, which of course is a Kiwi, I have to mention.
Yes,
Carl. But the other interesting thing that comes out of your commentary is I think sometimes we think that the privately held company space equals small. You know, there are very large private companies in this country, privately held companies in this country, and they run exactly the same way many small companies do, where the shareholder manager is the director or director with a husband, wife, significant other, maybe a brother or a cousin, and they don't achieve the same level of accountability that we see in public business or in enlisted entity. And it's interesting when we talk about the value of a director, which is your question. I often say to these individuals, you're complaining about the accountability of your team. So many times the conversation about a board comes up because of team performance or business performance. And one of the complaints that often comes through is, my team, they're just not accountable. And so we say to them, if they don't see you being held accountable, they're never going to live accountability. So the role of a board and the role of independence on a board, first and foremost, is about demonstrating accountability between your role as the manager, even if you are the shareholder, your role as a manager and the role the company holds in holding management and the business accountable for the performance of the company, ultimately to deliver a return to shareholders and other stakeholders.
So if I interpret what you're saying, what you're telling me is that the board equals the accountability framework for the owner-manager per se, and it's a good governance to, let's call it, separate those roles and responsibilities to get the accountability to flow properly.
Well, exactly. Often what we say to someone who thinks that they can hold themselves accountable and deliver great performance is, if I was the managing director of your business and you were the only shareholder and not involved, would you be comfortable if I was the only director of a company that you were the shareholder in? Or a shareholder in?
Well, I know you, Carl, so I would be comfortable, but most people wouldn't be.
Exactly. Thank you for your confidence. And I think that's the point, right? When it's third party, we're not comfortable if there's only one director. But all of a sudden, if we're the shareholder and the director, we think it's okay. We think that all of a sudden it's different. And the challenge we give managers in that space is, if you want to be the best manager you can be, you've got to have that accountability structure, which in the context of a company is provided by the board.
Okay. So, I mean, let me ask this question. And often we ask the question, so what does a director actually do? So just help me understand. So we're saying, okay, this is the accountability structure. So to drive that accountability, what should directors be doing? High level. What are the kinds of things that they should be accountable for?
They should be thinking and bringing good questions to the table, making sure there's an effective rhythm around the board process, whether that be board meetings or the discussions that happen outside of the boardroom. You know, often people think the role of a director is attending a board meeting once a month or once every second month for a few hours. The role of a board and the role of a director is to bring rhythm into both the board process in the boardroom and outside of the boardroom. And then through those structures, using them to challenge management on performance, both in and out of the boardroom, to provide critical thinking and key questions into the board process, and to make sure ultimately that management is delivering on the plan that they set for the organization.
So ultimately, from an accountability perspective, without having this role there, I'm seeing that there's a gap in most organizations. Yet, what I see out there in the business world is that there's this acceptance of this myopic line between shareholder, manager, director, and it's almost like, we have to have directors in terms of the Companies Act, so we do it. So if I was running a company, as I do run a few, and I said to you, or I had people out there, people I know, clients, whatever it may be, and I ask the question and I say, okay, advise me, Carl, what should I consider when I want to implement an effective board? What are the, let's call it the key takeouts, the list of things I should be thinking about? What does that look like? What's on that list?
Well, I think first and foremost, as a private business shareholder, the key distinction between that and a listed company requirement to have a board is that you don't have to have one. You're choosing to have one. And it creates a very key distinction in the role of the board and the way in which you're going to appoint and fire independent directors. Think about it this way. If any listed company on the exchange appointed a director today and realized tomorrow that he or she was the wrong individual, removing them is going to be a slower process, because if they remove them tomorrow, there's going to be an impact on their share price, because the market's going to go, how did you appoint someone and then the next day realize they were the wrong person? But in your private business, if you appoint a director today and realize tomorrow or the next day that they're actually not someone who's going to add value to the bottom line, they're not going to last.
No, they're not.
So the great thing about private companies is you can appoint directors with a view that they will drive shareholder value and other stakeholder outcomes. And with that in mind, you've got to look for directors that are going to help you create a high-performance board. That means balance around the board table. You don't want people who are the same as you, that think the same as you, that have the same background as you, because you're not going to create a board that's going to challenge and bring perspectives that you don't have. We use a particular way of achieving that through natural energy profiling as well, which is a component of the board process that we look at. Alongside that, you've got to look at methodology. So many people, you know, listening even to this, there'll be a number of you listening right now who are going to walk away from the radio after this call or after this discussion and go, I'm going to appoint a board. And you're going to pick up the phone and you're going to ring your mate who's just finished as a director on some listed company or sold his or her business for a decent whack of money. And you're going to think that they're the right people for your board. The problem with that logic is that it's not just about the people. It's about the methodology and the process you apply. So for example, there's a correlation between monthly board meetings and financial performance versus quarterly board meetings and financial performance. So if you only have quarterly board meetings, in our experience as a private company, your financial results and outcome is not going to be as good as if you have monthly or bi-monthly. So there's a methodology you've got to consider. And I always say to people, choose a methodology and run with it. Now, whether it's the best in the world, you know, aka our methodology, or it's another methodology is somewhat irrelevant. The point is, choose a methodology and run with it. Because just like I know how to run an effective board, you know how to run your business, your industry or your product or service, whatever you happen to be in. But if you've never actually learned what it means to be a director, why are you making decisions on how to run your board? So choose a methodology and run with that, sort of the second key thing. The third key thing is, right from the word go, create a distinction between your role as a shareholder, your role as a director, and your role as a manager. In my book, The Laws of Extreme Business Success, we talk about this distinction of what we call the three hats. And so often we jumble them up into one and we think about them as one hat, instead of understanding that even in our own business, until we treat it as an investment, just like we do any other investment we have, we lose the game and we don't achieve this thing we call extreme business success. So it's important to distinguish that just because you're a shareholder doesn't automatically mean you're the best person to sit on the board. And just because you're the shareholder doesn't mean you get to wear an immunity idol in your role as the manager leading the business.
Now, I'm going to ask a really, I guess, leading question. Have you ever come across scenarios where people are owners in a business and they don't sit on a board?
We do. Actually, I'm thinking of a particular client that we have in KwaZulu-Natal, where they have two major shareholders, one of whom is involved in the business but doesn't sit on the board. And the business has done very successfully from having independent directors come in and replace that energy. Thinking of actually another business, and you'll find this particular case study on our website under our case studies page of an Entrepreneurs Magazine article about this particular business. And they had a whole group of shareholder managers involved in the board and obviously involved as shareholders. And when we first were asked to get involved and support their board process, one of the things we challenged them on was the number of shareholder managers they had, the fact that their directors or their boardroom was full of directors who were all involved in management. And if they wanted to succeed, they needed to have some of those individuals step off the board. They actually removed several of the shareholder managers from the board, brought in a number of independent directors, and over the course of a number of years, all of the individuals who had previously been sitting around the table created very successful personal wealth improvement by this process of having a board come into the business. So, yeah, number of examples.
Almost sounds like I want to say, well, I've got a shareholding in this business and I definitely don't want to be on the board.
Yes, it's exactly.
And I think often people out there think that because they are a shareholder, A, they have to be a director.
Which you don't.
And two, they feel almost, I guess, slighted would be my choice of words. If they are not on the board, it's like, you're a shareholder here, but you're not in the boardroom. Like, why not? What's wrong with you?
When people bring that up with me, I say to them, or I use a sort of analogy. Imagine you've got a brother or a sister, and imagine your business is reasonably successful. Your brother or your sister win lotto. They win 50 million rand. They ring you up and they say, look, Carl, just won 50 million rand in the lotto. You're fairly clever in terms of your business success. I want you to help me invest this money. Now, I really like your business, so I want to put 20 million of it into your business and buy a shareholding, and I want you to invest the other 30 million on the stock exchange or buy property or whatever you do. And you go, because you're a caring sibling, okay, I'll give you a hand, and actually the money would be helpful to grow our business and love to have you invest in it and help the family make some money. So, you know, here's 25% of the equity or whatever the number ends up being. And you put the phone down and life goes on. A week later, your brother, who is self-professed, doesn't know how to invest money and get a return, rings you up and says, by the way, Carl, now I own 25% of the business. I want to be on the board. And all of a sudden, you've got your brother, who has no idea about business, sitting on the board of your company. Because too many people think that the right of shareholding automatically suggests they should be the person that sits on the board. And that's not what it means.
And doesn't it also give you the right to have a reserved parking bay?
Some people probably think that, eh?
Yeah, just bad joke.
Just on the issue of shareholder director, I think the other thing that's important in a South African context is people not understanding the liability that they can put on their shareholding entity if they start acting, because they are a shareholder, as though they have the same rights as a director. And there's, without getting technical, some interesting law we've got to be sure we understand when it comes to making decisions wearing our shareholder hat in relation to our interest in a business.
And that whole personal liability issue and breaching of the corporate veil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, most of us, we create these things called a limited liability company. And in creating this thing called a limited liability company, the first thing we start to do from the moment we create it is we start to destroy it. I often say to people, you know, you'll create a company with a business partner. So imagine, Richard, you and I decided we're going to go into business this afternoon. We would create a company. We would then go to our lawyer and we would ask them to create a shareholders agreement. And that shareholders agreement will include a list of reserved matters. And 9 times out of 10, at the top of the list of reserved matters is shareholders approve the annual budget. And in doing that, we immediately make ourselves potentially liable as directors of the company wearing our shareholder hat, because the approval of the budget is clearly, in terms of the Companies Act, a director's duty, not a shareholder's duty.
Yeah, I see your point. Now, Carl, I mean, let's step away for a moment and get back to the whole question of how directors help in the world of accountability. I mean, in that book, I really liked that, and you know, the acronym and how it was broken down, because the whole principle, and let's talk for a few minutes about the principles of how directors, and particularly independent non-executive directors in privately held companies and family firms, etc., help in those four categories of creating leverage, engagement, alignment, and ultimately development. So let's talk first about leverage. I mean, what can you expect from somebody out there? I mean, how do they, I mean, you've talked a little, you referenced a few case studies of how growth happens. How does that practically happen? What is it that allows a board with that, let's call it external perspective? Where does that leverage come from?
So the thing with a board is it's not like a farm where you're growing plants and you can see the result on a direct correlation. You plant the seed, you get the result. The leverage of a board comes through understanding the value of a board and then being prepared to engage with the board and the way you run the business. So in my book, Traversing the Avalanche, I talk about a case study from Cape Town, where a managing director of a great firm down there, a company called Status Staffing, had a board, privately held company with independent directors. And one of the things he used the board for was bringing in managers into the boardroom to create a seriousness around the discussion he was having to do with their division.
Mm.
And it's interesting the way a manager will prepare for a board meeting that includes independent directors versus a board meeting that includes the managing director and his father, who are the shareholders.
Mm, now, that's really interesting, because I do think let's call it the other party's perspective on the seriousness of the board actually, you know, it makes sense. I also think one of the experiences that I've observed is that when people realize you're taking your business seriously, they do too. So it's a little bit of, you know, lead by example. So if you as the MD are accountable to the board, as you should be, there's this like, okay, well, hold on a second. If he gets called to account and I get called to account, understand that, you know, it's one size fits all. We're all going to be held accountable here.
Look, an area you would understand very well, Richard, is the auditors.
Mm.
It is fundamentally different the way an auditor engages with a business when they realize there are independent directors. Mm. I've seen auditors who haven't engaged, really engaged, with a business for 4 or 5 years, but they've been the audit company for, you know, that period. And then they get called to the first finance and risk committee meeting of the company. And you see the senior partner from an accounting firm, and I could name a number of accounting firms around this country who have been in finance and risk committees that our organization has organized for clients. For the first finance and risk committee, the auditors turned up, and all of a sudden there's a seriousness to this discussion.
Mm.
You know, I could name businesses in this country where banks have turned up to the board meeting to present their debt strategy, and they brought the full cavalry of the senior banking team, because all of a sudden the business that they've been engaged with for 5 or 10 years has stepped up to another seriousness and all of a sudden got independent non-executive directors. So there is massive leverage that managing directors can have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think for me, you know, listening to those, just those two examples of how your, let's call them external providers, view your business as well from a leverage perspective, that's huge. Now, around the whole question of engagement, I mean, clearly having an independent non-exec, and I mean, we talk of them almost singularly here, but we must realize that this can be a plural environment depending on how big the entity is. How do they help create engagement? What's that kind of process?
So just on that first point, we wouldn't recommend big private boards. So we are big fans of 2 or 3 independent directors, that's it.
Mm.
In terms of engagement, I think the key is determining or understanding that your board are not a service provider.
Mm.
So if you treat your independent directors not as a service provider, but as independent directors of your company, and you do things like make sure they're invited to the Christmas event, make sure they're invited to key staff functions and key stakeholder functions, and they are used when you're engaging key clients, you'll create an emotional attachment between the independent directors and the business, which is what you want.
Hmm.
And from there, the engagement should occur both in and outside the boardroom. So the regularity of the board process is important, but then also the engagement opportunities like the pre-board meetings, like the chat that the chief executive and chairman should have on a semi-regular basis, regular in terms of the board meeting preparation, like having independent directors show up to key meetings on site with team members so that the team get to see that these people exist. You know, as a managing director and the owner of a company, you can talk about your board all you like, but until staff and team members see independent directors walk through the factory and the managing director goes, "Welcome to our bosses," or "Meet my boss," people don't really get the value of the leverage component we've just spoken about.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that whole thing of "this is my boss and you're the boss."
Yes,
that really, you know, changes the way things. I must say, I've also had recently an example where staff in an environment referred to the CEO, and they referred to this person's the collection people, and they said, oh, we're collecting X person's money. And I sat there and I thought, well, okay, but ownership for me would imply you talk about you collect our money.
Yes.
Or you collect the money of the investors and the various funders or whatever. But to kind of personalize it so much that you're collecting the boss's money, it kind of makes it a little bit of a mockery of the whole, let's call it the corporate governance space and environment.
There's clearly a people issue in that business or a culture issue that needs to be dealt with. But that aside, I think just let's touch on this idea of ownership very briefly. Because when we talk about alignment, this relates very clearly to that. People talk about people owning a business. Now, if you want to get technical, and I think it's important sometimes to do that, there is no such thing as a business owner in any legislation here in South Africa, let alone anywhere else in the world. Business ownership is language, slang, that you and I use to justify the way in which we run our own business. It's my business, therefore. I own the company, therefore. You don't actually own the company. Mm. All you own is a bundle of rights. So shareholders out there, understand this. You own a bundle of rights. The right to appoint the directors, the right to liquidate the company if it's not performing, the right to receive a dividend. You don't own the company itself. Mm. And if you really want to split your role as a shareholder, a director, and a manager and align your activity with each of those effectively, you need to understand that business ownership is slang that you've been using to justify the way in which you've been running your company.
Mm, that makes sense. Now, finally, Carl, as we wrap up, how does a board help a company and particular owners and shareholders develop from a development perspective?
Key to an effective board, a high-performance board, supporting a shareholder manager developing through the journey is not trying to do everything at once. You know, it's not about coming in and creating compliance. Often we think about the role of a board as creating compliance. The role of a board is to create performance. Mm. Now, right now, the thing you might need in your business to create performance is KPIs for you as the shareholder manager to be held accountable against. Right now, what you might need is a delegation of authority that actually really clearly articulates who's responsible for what. Right now, what you might need is people outside challenging you about your performance because you think you're doing well, but actually you've got lazy. You know, often we think that the role of a board in developing a company is to take an underperforming business and develop it into a performing. But actually, it's as much about taking a performing business and improving performance and unlocking performance, what we call relative performance, as it is about turning around a disaster situation.
Mm. Well, Carl, thank you very much. We really do appreciate the insights that you've given us.
No worries at all.
For everybody, that was Carl Bates from the Sirdar Group. Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. We're going to be chatting to Carl about his experiences as an entrepreneur in creating the Sirdar Group and the things that he learned through that process. So we're looking forward to that. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.